dust in the crack between the door and the floor. A puff of air, nothing more, but movement nonetheless. Noiselessly, Bram sets the rifle down, leaning it against his chair. He reaches into the straw basket to his left and retrieves a wild white rose, one of seven remaining. The oil lamp, the only light in the room, flickers with his movement. With caution, he approaches the door. The last rose lay in a shriveled heap, the petals brown and black and ripe with death, the stem dry and sickly with thorns appearing larger than they had when the flower still held life. The stench of rot wafts up. The rose has taken on the scent of a corpse flower. Bram kicks the old rose away with the toe of his boot and gently rests the new bloom in its place against the bottom of the door. Bless this rose, Father, with your breath and hand and all things holy. Direct your angels to watch over it and guide their touch to hold all evil at bay. Amen. From the other side of the door comes a bang, the sound of 1,000 pounds impacting the old oak. The door buckles, and Bram jumps back to the chair, his hands scooping up the leaning rifle and taking aim as he drops to one knee. Then all is quiet again. Bram remains still, the rifle sighted on the door until the weight of the gun causes his aim to falter. He lowers the barrel then, his eyes sweeping the room. What would one think if one were to walk in and witness such a sight? He has covered the walls with mirrors, nearly 2 dozen of them in all shapes and sizes, all he had. His tired face stares back at him 100-fold as his image bounces from one looking glass to the next. Bram tries to look away, only to find himself peering back into the eyes of his own reflection, each face etched with lines belonging on a man much older than his 21 years. Between the mirrors he has nailed crosses, nearly 50 of them. Some bear the image of Christ, while others are nothing more than fallen branches nailed together and blessed by his own hand. He continued the crosses onto the floor, first with a piece of chalk, then by scraping directly into the stone with the tip of his Bowie knife until no surface remained untouched. Whether or not it is enough, he cannot be sure, but it is all he could do. He cannot leave. Most likely, he will never leave. Bram finds his way back to the chair and settles in. Outside, a loon cries out as the moon comes and goes behind thick clouds. He retrieves the pocket watch from his coat and curses. He forgot to wind it, and the hands ceased their journey at 4:30. He stuffs it back into his pocket. Another bang on the door, this one louder than the last. Bram's breath stills as his eyes play back over the door, just in time to see the dust dance at the floor and settle back down to the stone. How long can this barrier hold against such an assault? Bram doesn't know. The door is solid, to be sure, but the onslaught behind it grows angrier with each passing hour, its determination to escape growing as the dawn creeps nearer. The petals of the rose have already begun to brown, much faster than the last. What will become of him when it finally does breach the door? He thinks of the rifle and the knife and knows they will be of little use. He spots his journal on the floor beside the basket of roses. It must have fallen from his coat. Bram picks up the tattered leather-bound volume and thumbs through the pages before returning to the chair, one eye still on the door. He has very little time. Plucking a pencil from his breast pocket, he turns to a blank page and begins to write by the quivering light of the oil lamp.
The Journal of Bram Stoker. The Peculiarities of Ellen Crone. That is, of course, where I should start, for this is as much her story as it is mine, perhaps more so. This woman, this monster, this wraith, this friend, this being. She was always there for us. My sisters and brothers would tell you as much. But how so is where inquiries should lie. She was there at my beginning, and will no doubt be there for my end, as I was for hers. This was